G-93, Fiori Frontieri Global Headquarters, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Few buildings in the world had a recent history as simultaneously illustrious and dubious as the Fiori Frontieri building in Colorado Springs. For decades, the imposing structure had housed the late Richard Walker's Interspace Defense Agency, the now defunct agency whose name had since gone on to ironically inspire that of the Interspace Contact Agency, which was in turn housed in perhaps the only other building that had been repurposed in such a high-profile manner. More recently, while Italian billionaire and space enthusiast Timo Fiori had been in the process of refitting the old IDA building to serve as the global headquarters for a research-driven company that many spoke of as a private space program, a cowardly terrorist attack had gravely injured both Timo and Emma McCarthy, then Emma Ford, with only sloppy workmanship on the part of the bomb makers having spared their innocent lives. Now, however, the future at Fiori Frontieri looked brighter than ever. On a day when the ICA was just hours away from being formally instituted in Buenos Aires, Timo Fiori was hard at work, like a man whose life depended on it. Money had never motivated Timo, which he fully acknowledged was because his victory in the genetic lottery meant that he'd never had to worry about it, and his presence today in a physics laboratory in Colorado, rather than one of his mansions in Italy, or indeed the seat with his name on it at the ICA, was born of the same passion that had seen him allocate so much time and capital to space-related endeavors over the years. Long before the messengers ever touched down in front of an awestruck global audience of billions, and before the general public even knew Dan McCarthy's name, Timo had spent hundreds of millions of dollars on everything from purpose-built observatories to scholarships and research grants. Timo's interests extended beyond the extraterrestrial focus of his good friend Billy Kendrick, whose investigative and outreach work Timo had quietly funded while asking nothing in return, with his notebooks containing plans for everything from colossal orbital laboratories and telescopes to full-blown multi-generational starships intended to carry humans on the kinds of voyages that had so far been confined to the pages of science fiction. A working relationship with alien beings who possessed the kind of technology the messengers did had always been beyond even Timo's wildest dreams, and the doors it opened made him giddy. This was why the past few years had been so suffocatingly frustrating for Timo, who had been effectively frozen out of successive international organizations, which presented themselves as the sole legitimate point of contact between the universe's known intelligent races. For far too long, needless bureaucracy and petty geopolitical bickering had prevented meaningful cooperation so consistently that even the messengers had expressed their growing frustrations. Now that the ICA was opening its doors and Timo was being welcomed into the fold, primarily at Dan's request, but with the general support of the relatively conservative European governments who had been least keen on the new agency's breakaway from the inherent checks and balances of its previous United Nations framework, cooperation could accelerate, and progress could finally be delivered. Even the close study of relatively mundane things, like the methods of propulsion used by the messenger's small saucer-like craft, could lead to technological breakthroughs that would change life on Earth. But Timo's sights were set far higher than that. He had far more interest in the bigger things that made those already incredible flying saucers seem mundane in comparison. Chiefly, the colossal mothership that had cast a long shadow over Beijing a year earlier, and the seemingly physics-defying portal which enabled its near-instantaneous interplanetary transit between Earth and New Kerguelen. Timo's work today was focused on brainwave analysis, as he pored over measurements and observation data taken during telepathic experiments he had conducted with Clark McCarthy over the past few days. Both men had placed upon their necks one of the remarkable square patches gifted to Dan and Billy during their recent trip to New Kerguelen, and from there had engaged in all manner of conversational tests as the ideas had come to them. The whole two-hour test session, conducted with the knowledge of Dan and the others within the Birchwood inner circle so as to make sure everyone was on the same page, had also been recorded in video form so that a full spectrum was available for analysis. Everything was stored strictly locally, and within the highest security area of a building often spoken of as truly impenetrable. After the building's initial refit from its already secure basis as home to the Inner Space Defense Agency, Timo had sought secondary advice from a source many would have seen as underqualified, but whose keen instincts for security Timo knew very well. Phil Norris. Phil had been responsible for shielding Dan McCarthy's basement from all forms of snooping back when the family had been living with a crushingly heavy secret, and while Dan himself had been seeking the greatest possible degree of privacy, and the security of Phil's own prepper stash was the stuff of legend among his circle of friends, no one had ever seen it or even been told where it was, of course, but they could imagine what kinds of measures he would have taken to protect an extensive emergency stockpile about which even his closest friends could only speculate. The chief problem in evaluating the observational data garnered from Timo and Clark's telepathic conversations was that they couldn't recruit any experts to assist in the necessary analysis. The risk of doing so was far too great, given that it would require offering some sort of explanation as to where the patches had come from, all the while introducing the possibility that the expert in question could sell out and take his knowledge to the kind of people from whom it simply had to be kept. On the other hand, Dan and Timo were equally convinced that limited aspects of the kind of telepathy granted by the uplift patches could be used for hugely beneficial purposes on Earth. In the meantime, however, both were well aware of how delicate the situation was, given the potentially nefarious means to which the telepathy could be turned. Timo's own heavy research into the shady hedge fund which had recently purchased the often hostile Blitz Media Empire, which might have occupied Dan's mind just as much if he hadn't had so much else to deal with, led him to believe that powerful interests were already bankrolling speculative research into harnessing the kinds of psychic powers the messengers had publicly displayed on multiple occasions. No competitors knew what Timo knew, much less had access to alien patches which harmlessly and reversibly granted the very powers they sought to harness, but Timo also knew only too well that even a rumor about the patch's existence would make himself, along with everyone in Birchwood, a target for things he didn't even want to think about. It felt like no exaggeration for Timo to consider that the small patches found on New Kerguelen and permitted by the messengers to be taken away for study were truly priceless, and almost certainly the most valuable pieces of technology in the world. The prize for whoever could successfully reverse engineer the uplift powers and harness them independently of the messenger's assistance would be a bounty like no other. Everyone would want the power were it ever made commercially available, even if only for fear of being left behind and exploited if they didn't possess it while everyone else did. But this kind of societal arms race wasn't what concerned those in the know. What troubled them most of all was rather the inevitable race to weaponize telepathy for privacy-killing surveillance purposes, and even more frighteningly, to literally weaponize the closely linked uplift power of telekinesis for military purposes. Guarding the technology until meaningful checks and balances could be put in place was the only sensible course of action, and one Timo was very keen to participate in. Fortunately, from his perspective, everyone else who was in on it agreed that it made sense to gather some data in the meantime in an effort to understand as much as possible about what the uplift powers actually did to the human mind while they were engaged. Timo felt a rarely spoken fear that the messengers might not return to Earth to engage in any further information exchange for some time, and perhaps until a significant degree of stability returned to their own world after some tumultuous recent discoveries. He needn't have worried about this, given that Leisha had been in Buenos Aires moments earlier, as he would soon learn, but the consideration had played a part in pushing him and Clark to begin their research into telepathy in case the messengers had remained absent for much longer. Along with Clark, Timo was one of a tiny handful of people who knew the full extent of what his close friends Dan and Billy had discovered on the alien world of New Kerguelen just a few weeks earlier. Unlike Clark and most of those others, though, Timo's mind was focused almost solely on the opportunities afforded by those technological discoveries, rather than any cause for alarm regarding the disturbing context surrounding the mysterious architects who were the real brains behind the uplift powers and seemingly everything else previously thought to be of the messenger's invention. It was a terrible shame that the messengers had been mistreated as they had by the newly discovered third race of so-called architects, and Timo truly felt for them. But as Timo's motto for life had always held, the only way forward was forward. It appeared to him that the deceitful architects were decidedly out of the picture, what with the radio-like machines they had used to deceptively communicate with the messengers no longer functioning, and their outpost in New Kerguelen's second shelter having been abandoned with a bounty of technology left behind. The coming hours would bring news Timo's way that was so far only known to Dan McCarthy and Tara Ford, that the messengers had detected a portal-like gate which they confidently assumed linked their world to the architects in the same way the only other known gate linked New Kerguelen to Earth. In previous speculative discussions about what might be done if another gate was ever discovered, Timo had instinctively and insistently proclaimed that gates are meant to be walked through. That's why they're gates and not fences. Given what he had since learned about the architects whose home world seemingly lay on the other side of this gate, however, and despite his own belief that their sudden absence from New Kerguelen probably suggested that a well-deserved fate had befallen them, Timo's response to the big news was likely to be far less bullshy than when the existence of another gate had been merely hypothetical. And given what his friend Billy Kendrick was minutes away from independently discovering about the architects on what was a remarkably busy day for alien-related developments, Timo would certainly not be alone in his newfound hesitation to take the leap.